All right. Thank you. Nice to be here. Nice to be back at Beckenham. I was here 3 years ago talking about cannabis and euthanasia, so slightly different topic tonight. And look, I appreciate you making the time to come. I've found that if I had advertised this meeting 3 years ago, maybe I might have got maybe four people. But there's something about what's going on in our schools that has really got parents concerned, so getting good response. I don't know if you guys remember a preacher by the name of Tony Campolo. I mean, I always remember him from many years ago when we used to go to Capital Teen Convention in Wellington, and he was one of the speakers, and when he spoke, he spat. And so anybody sitting in the front row would get sprayed. And so one time he came out to speak on one of the events that we had, and a group of us got in the front row. And when he came out to speak, we put up our umbrellas. And so he thought that was hilarious. But the reason I mention him is because Tony Campolo went and spoke at a church one time, and he said, "I've got three things to tell you. The first thing is that tonight 30,000 children are going to die from malnutrition and starvation. And the second thing is that some of you don't give a shit," except he said the word. "And the third thing," he said, "is that some of you are more concerned that I said shit than you are that 30,000 kids are going to die tonight." Now, the reason I tell you that is because tonight, you may be offended by what you see. In fact, if you're not, then check your pulse. But please don't shoot the messenger. I'm simply presenting to you what the Ministry of Education is wanting to push at your children and asking you, are you happy with it? It may be that you go away tonight and think, "I'm quite all right for my children to be taught this stuff." So be it. That's your choice. But you may have a different view when you see what's actually included. So we'll get straight into it. So I do just want to warn you that some of this material is R18, what I would call R18. And so the irony is that I believe that it's suitable only for adults, if even that, and yet children as young as 5 and 6 and 7 are being exposed to this material. So you can make a judgment as we go through as to whether you agree with me. So, look, I know probably at this time of night you're probably settling down to what? Watch the 6 o'clock fake news maybe? You're sitting down for a bit of fiction. I can't watch the 6 o'clock news anymore. My blood pressure goes up. I shout words at the screen, which I'm not supposed to say. My wife says, "Bob, are you watching the news again?" She always knows. So, you know, I go on to some factual program like Shortland Street or something, you know, something with a bit more facts. But you may be sitting down to just watch something at this time of night. So what I want to do is just open up with a short video presentation. It's from a longer one that I do, but just the start of it, which gives the background of the Relationship Sexuality Education Program and how it came about to be. So it's a little bit of an overview. So we'll just watch that and then I'll make comments.
Relationships and Sexuality Education Guidelines, or RSE for short, were released by the Ministry of Education in September 2020. Now, despite being well-intentioned with an aim to create more inclusive school environments and reduce bullying, these proposals are for the most part ideological. And while their content is portrayed as scientific, they actually have no basis in science. And this should be concerning to all parents and caregivers. Primary age students are being targeted with the confusing and dangerous message that changing sex is as easy as changing clothes. Girls are discovering that biological boys have free access to their changing rooms, and the curriculum states that parents are able to be kept in the dark when their child has decided to identify as transgender during the school day. Now, you can read the full analysis in our 30-page report. But in the new curriculum for primary age children, requirements include: students should be addressed by their preferred names and pronouns. Schools need to ensure that students can access toilets and changing rooms that align with their gender identification. Trans students should not be required to use a gender-neutral toilet rather than the male or female toilets of their choice. Teachers should challenge sex norms. For example, the assumption that sex characteristics at birth are always male or female. And teachers should challenge homophobia, transphobia, sexism, gender binaries, even interrogate the ongoing effects of colonisation. They want 7- and 8-year-old children to be able to identify gender stereotypes, understand the difference between gender and sex, and know that there are diverse gender and sexual identities in society. They also teach that there are more than two genders, labelling the assumption that there are only two genders, girl-boy or man-woman, incorrect. But it's not only in health classes. They want this ideology, this indoctrination, in all parts of the primary school classroom, all subjects. In science, your child will consider how biological sex has been constructed and measured over time, and consider variations in puberty, including the role of hormone blockers. Do you really want your primary age child being indoctrinated on how biological sex has been constructed and the role of hormone blockers? Were you thinking about these issues when you were at primary school? In technology, your child will identify how gender expectations are embedded in technology, for example, in the design and style of power tools and other tools. Yep, those annoying male and female plugs and connections. And they will explore symbols linked to the gay and transgender rights movement. In the social sciences, your child will be encouraged to explore the development and persistence of gender stereotypes, for example, by researching the Me Too movement. In English, engage in dialogue and debate in the context of provocative online posts linked to relationships, gender, and sexuality. Again, remember, this is for a primary age audience. As you can see, the content inserted into every other subject is not relevant to their learning. It verges on the ridiculous. It's actually a clear attempt at imposing or indoctrinating their worldview on your children. Schools are meant to be places of education, not indoctrination, and politics, where they're more focused on teaching your children to become defenders of leftist radical ideology. And what is most significant is that there is no attempt to include opposing views in the curriculum. For example, that no, you just can't choose your gender. Now, as our report says, instead of being taught that questions and confusion around gender and puberty and growing up is normal, that we all went through it, and that they will come to accept their biological sex as it is, your child will be socialized to believe that confusion about one's gender is a sign that they could be stuck in the wrong gender, born in the wrong body, and that it is part and parcel of pubertal change for them to want to change who they are in order to become the right gender. This is reflected in the Year 7 and 8 teaching. That's intermediate school age, where the guidelines want preteens to know about pubertal change, including hormonal change, menstruation, body development, and the development of gender identities. When it comes to gender confusion and dysphoria, if we enableise, normalise and encourage this kind of behaviour, as the Ministry of Education would have us do, we should not be at all surprised at the harm these young people inflict upon themselves because we refuse to tell them the truth, and that it sadly becomes more severe and in some cases irreversible. In fact, here's a quick look at some of the words in the glossary of terms that they want to be used in primary schools. Asexual, bisexual, cisgender, heteronormativity, intersex, non-binary, pansexual, sex assigned at birth, transitioning, transsexual. Yep. Apparently, every 5- to 9-year-old needs to know all those. Apparently. Oh, and their translation into Pacific languages as well. Cook Island, Tongan, Samoan. Do Pacifica families actually want this teaching? And as I've highlighted in a recent episode of McBlog, the Ministry of Education has recommended that schools normalise transgender identities, consider ways to increase the use of gender-diverse language in the classroom, and says that using gendered language such as girls and boys, ladies and gentlemen, can be alienating for gender non-conforming and gender diverse students. Well, this is not from Disney. This is straight from the Ministry of Education. Teachers are encouraged by the ministry to keep a child's mental health issues secret from their parents by allowing the child to adopt a new persona while at school, including the use of preferred pronouns, without having necessarily to inform the parents that there are identity issues. As you can see here, they specifically advise teachers to ask young people, check with the student about the name and or pronouns they want to be used in the records that parents or caregivers may see, as they might be different to the ones they use at school. And finally, years 7 to 8, so this is intermediate age, about 11 and 12 years old. And apart from the so-called safe sex method, the teacher guideline says, explain that when we become sexually active, we should get regular tests and checks to monitor our health, just as we go to the dentist to have our teeth checked. Where might someone go to have these checks? Students need to know that doctors can provide contraceptives to young people under the age of 16, and this service is confidential. Yes, we don't want those pesky parents being informed. Highlight the fact that if the students are thinking about having sex, oh, did I mention that this is for 11 to 12 year olds? It's important to talk to their doctor or nurse about how to keep themselves and their partner safe. It doesn't matter whether they're in a same-sex or an opposite-sex couple. Any couple is at risk of STIs. Identify the services in your area that can provide free support and make them known to your 11 and 12-year-old students. For young teens starting at secondary school, it's these types of activity cards. Still want to go on this journey with family planning?
Okay, so that gives you a bit of a guideline. That's a bit of a background as to how it's come to be. And the Ministry of Education sends the Education Review Office to go through to see if schools are promoting wellbeing through sex education. And what's interesting is that when you look at the document, there's no mention in it around the areas of abstinence, delay, moral decisions or choices. It seems to be purely mechanical. And so kids are being taught about the gender-bred person, and apparently we have a gender identity, we have a gender expression, we have a biological sex, we are sexually attracted and we're also romantically attracted. That's the high school version, and then there's a junior version for very young children, obviously, you know, designed to be attractive to them. And so children are basically being taught that they can move from one side to the other. They can be male to female, female to male. They can sit in the middle and be genderqueer. And as part of the resource that's available to schools, there's an organisation called Villainese, which is Lizzie Marvely, which some of you may have heard of. And she has put together these videos which feature Shortland Street actors. Now, I know all of you religiously watch Shortland Street, so you may recognise some of the people. No, you don't know. No, nor do I. But this is who it is. And so they keep pushing this messaging, and they do it in this video.
This might blow your mind, but sex and gender are two different things. I know, mind blown.
Your sex is what your doctor assigned you at birth, so male, female, or intersex. Your gender is how you identify, so man, woman, or another term like genderqueer or non-binary.
A good way to remember is that sex is what's between your legs and gender is what's in your head and your heart.
A lot of forms ask you to tick what your gender is. Most of the time, they look like this, but really, they should look like this.
Before a baby is born, half of what anyone talks about is whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. But just like sexual orientation, gender is a spectrum. It's not as simple as pink or blue.
A spectrum is like a line. So, woman, non-binary, man. and they're all somewhere along the same line.
You might be born with a sex that doesn't match your...
Okay, so that's enough of that. I mean, basically you can see the ideology that is being pushed. And I don't know if there's any teachers here, but the teachers' union is pushing this ideology. As you can see, their official statement is that your gender identity is what you choose it, irrespective of your biological sex. So let's have a look at some of the type of activities which may be used in schools. And remember, we're not talking about necessarily just high school, we're talking about primary school as well. So here's an example of something that was used in year five, which would be around nine years old. And I won't read out what they say, but you can probably see this is what 8 or 9 year olds are doing worksheets on. This was a sheet that was handed out at a school in Northland. It actually went to the media because a lot of parents came to us and made a complaint. But you can see here it talks about the five different legal classifications of sex, genital, digital, object, oral and anal, and describes them. This is in an intermediate school, so this is 11 and 12 year olds. Remember, the age of sexual consent is 16, but this sheet. Now, the school's excuse was that this was a rogue teacher and it wasn't approved. The problem with that narrative was that the teacher had just been to a family planning training weekend and the sheet was approved by another teacher, senior teacher in the school. So that was kind of the smokescreen. Here's a sheet that was given to year four, so that's about 9 year olds. I won't read it out, but you can sort of see the topics up the top there. And this is a sheet that is given to, what is this? This is year 10, so this is still 14 year olds. So that's a bit of fun. This was a sheet also given to 14 year olds where it talks about rights and responsibilities. I'll read the top one. Zach expects Zara to give him oral sex after she says no to intercourse as she can't get pregnant, but he can still be pleasured. And second one, Zach has been pressuring Zara to shave her pubic hair because it looks better and it's about rights and responsibilities. There's a little sheet talking about the myths and the truths, apparently. Look at that second to bottom one. All women enjoy threesomes. And a special activity they have to do is record what is Rainbow Youth and what is their aim. They don't have one on what is Family First and what do they do. Look, once again, I hope I warned you, but as I say, I'm only the messenger. The problem is that the Ministry of Education is ramming down this type of teaching with other organisations like Rainbow Youth and Family Planning. And they've been able to get away with it simply because you haven't known about it and it's been hidden from you. Well, let me give you some more examples. So, you know, this looks quite exciting, doesn't it? This is a part of the session where they talk about, well, rather than having sex. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, great, finally. Some alternatives, you know, rather than having sex, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about maybe the kids go for a bike ride, maybe they go for a game of footy, you know, they go to the swimming pool. Well, let's have a look at what is the list of activities rather than having sex that our kids are being told. We've got their showering together, touching your partner's body or genitals, rubbing bodies together, masturbating in front of each other, licking apart from the genitals. Are you offended yet? Because I certainly am. But once again, it's offensive because it's being targeted at young children. And what happens is that when it's not family planning or Inside Out, it's other programs that are sneaking into the schools. And schools may adopt these programs to sort of distract you. So, for example, there was a big deal about mates and dates by the ACC. Now that has been discontinued. Great. The problem is it's just replaced by this new one, In Your Skin. And this is a program that has been written by two Australian sexologists. And so here's some of the messaging that they push. For example, responsible binding. So binding is for girls who are developing breasts and they want to identify as boys, so they literally bind, strap their breasts to make them look more masculine. Very, very tough on the body and very uncomfortable. Here's one on pronouns, ZZM, ZHER, FAIFAIR, HOO-HOO, which I think is a bug in the system. What is heteronormativity? And, you know, middle paragraph, it assumes the gender binary. The gender binary is the enemy. I'm not sure if you realise, I didn't know this, but apparently May is masturbation May. And so therefore there's this kind of imagery about masturbation. I won't keep that up for long. And then, of course, they push gender affirmation surgery. Now, gender affirmation surgery is beyond chemicalisation. This is about mastectomies and chopping off healthy body parts and things that make us guys' eyes water. It's chopping off healthy stuff, and yet they're saying that that's all good. Facial reconstruction to get rid of the Adam's apple for a boy who wants to identify as a girl. But now I think they've sunk to another low level, and they have developed an app, a phone app. So it's not even sex education in schools. And what you probably noticed about the sex education in schools is that it's not the specific class where we say, we're going to talk about the birds and the bees. It's actually, they're putting it in different topics. You know, for example, the terrible binary of electronic equipment. Why does it always have to be male and female that works? That type of thing. So it's all in all different subjects. So this is a new app that's been developed, and it's called Beyond the Birds and the Bees. Okay, and so kids are being encouraged to download it. Now, let me first show you who's behind it. So the contributors are groups like Family Planning, Inside Out, Spinoff, Villainese, AIDS Foundation there. So immediately there's red flags there, but note the first one, the Classification Office. That is the chief censor who determines G, M rating, R16, R18, etc. So the Classification Office is a sponsor of this and approves it. Now, I'll show you a bit of it and you tell me whether you think we've got a problem, Houston. But who are the supporters? Well, interestingly, a lot of the funding comes out of this area. From the University of Canterbury, obviously government funded partly, KiwiNet, which is part of Ministry of Business and Innovation and Employment, MBIE, Pegasus, which is a health provider down here, partly government funded, and Lottery Health Research, which is government administration of lotto money for research issues. So in effect, you've got a lot of government funding going into this phone app. Now, when you first go onto the app on your phone, a thing will flash up that says, this is R12. Okay, it's for kids 12 or older. But then it also says, if you are younger than 12, go and talk to your parents about it. Now, I'm sure you can just imagine every 11, 10, 9-year-old rushing off to their parents to say, should I look at this? They're not going to do that, are they? And in fact, somebody told me that when it was first released, Google Play was releasing it and said it was R3. So in other words, anybody older than 3 could access it. So let's just assume that it's 12 plus. So let's have a look at it. Because the Classification Office says that this phone app that your kids can access is suitable for 12 or older. So, I mean, if you look at some of the overview of topics, there's some positive things, okay? Online world, the relationships we want, what is aroha love, right? But then you go into some of the specifics and we go to the page sex the first time, and there's some of the topics that the kids will click on. Remember, these are 12-year-olds or older, or 8-year-olds who definitely didn't ask their parents. So we've got foreplay, fingering, hand jobs, oral sex, anal sex. Remember, the chief censor says that you're 12-year-old, it's okay for them to see all this. And there's that new one there, PIV sex. I have asked around the country if anybody knows what it is. Does anybody know what PIV sex is? If you've got children, you do. It's penis and vagina. In other words, it's normal sex. But when you distort everything and redefine everything, then you have to create labels for actually what sex normally is. Okay? And then there's a you can click on and look at binders and tape. Of course, once again, encouraging girls to transition to be boys. And we've even got a section on how to keep sex toys clean. Once you've looked through all those topics, you then get to watch this really groovy video. You might just need to turn down the volume a little bit on this one.
You can do vagina to penis.
Or hand to vagina. Or hand to vulva.
Or mouth to vulva.
Or vulva to vulva.
Or hand to penis.
You could do mouth to penis.
Or penis to anus.
You could just, like, rub yourselves against each other if that made you feel good.
There's a full list of items you can pick from.
It's up to you.
Okay. Once again, 12-year-old or older, but as a phone app accessible to any child. And so there's this imagery that they push, you know, about surgery and hormone replacement theory and name changes. So very strong agenda of changing your sex and experimenting not only with your pronouns and your gender, but also your sexualities. So this is a program which the chief censor says is okay for your 12-year-old. I don't know about you, but I think it's disgusting. I think even for adults it's disgusting. And yet it's being approved, government funded, and being pushed down on young children and the groups. And it's the Ministry of Education. I think one thing I really want to make clear tonight is that it's not necessarily the school that is pushing this. It's been pushed from policy wonks in Wellington with the aid of certain radical groups by the Ministry of Education onto schools. And most schools, in fact, don't want a bar of it. And most teachers, in fact, don't want a bar of it. My oldest daughter is 26. She's been a primary school teacher at a Decile 2 school in South Auckland. And, you know, they've got lots of kids, Indian kids, they've got Muslim kids, they've got Pacifica children. And she says, Dad, the parents don't want it, and even the kids do not want it, so we don't go anywhere near it. And that is a good thing. But as I showed you, the Ministry of Education is specifically telling schools that they can rename kids and they can adopt social transitioning, what we call social transitioning, without parents necessarily being told. So there's this level of sneakiness and excluding the parents. So that means, and if there's any teachers here, you could be in a very difficult situation. If your school is instructing you that you have to tell a biological lie and tell the girl in front of you that it's he, her, he, him, or even them, they, which some schools may make you do. And we've seen teachers getting deregistered because of that. I mean, we've got some schools, this is a school north of Auckland, who's telling their kids that there's 112 genders and over 200 sexualities. And we wonder why our kids are stressed. And then they come along with these big celebrations, and so they have a whole week of celebrating Pride. The interesting thing about this is that only 12% of schools signed up for this week. 88% of schools wanted nothing to do with it and preferred to do reading, writing, and arithmetic. But here's an activity that Schools Pride Week did, where for 13 plus, they did a special Zoom event where kids could register and get to meet role models for drag queens online. And for the kids who Googled who these drag queens were, the one that is shown at top right, this is what's shown on his Facebook page. Now, let me just move on. So, one of the arguments, if I was here trying to persuade you that we need to tell all this information to kids, which I'm not, but if I was, my argument would be, well, kids are randy, they basically can't control themselves, and so we need to help them do it safely, right? That's generally the argument they would use. The problem is that that's not what's happening to our young people. If you look at the Youth 2000 study, so this is a study done by Auckland University where they survey high school children across, high school youth across the whole country, 8,000 from all the schools. And they've done it over four time periods, 2001, 2007, 2012, 2019. And as part of the survey, what they asked was, firstly, have you ever had sex, even a one-night stand? And secondly, are you currently sexually active. Now, what you'll see up there is that, oh, whoops, let's just go back. Back in 2001, 31% said that they had ever once had sex or more. Okay, so they weren't virgins. Go to 2019 and it has dropped to just 20%. So in a typical high school, just one in five children, youth, have had sex, even just once. In other words, 80% are virgins. And then the second question was, are you currently sexually active? Back in 2001, it was 20%, 21%. It's dropped to 13%. So currently 87% of your typical high school are not sexually active. Now, there's a number of reasons for that, and they may not be better alternatives, to be honest. It's a lot of social media, and so there's not a lot of as much physical contact. You know, they're meeting virtually online. And the second thing is the degradation of porn, and that's used as a substitute. So those are two areas, obviously social media and porn, that need to be tackled. But for some reason, the politicians don't want to go there, even though we've asked them to. But what it does show is that, as it says in the summary, sexual activity has significantly reduced and students are actually waiting longer to have sex. That's a good thing. But do we go into the schools to encourage that and encourage abstinence and say, delay it until you're ready for the consequences of having sex? No, they don't do that. Now, when I was spoke at Te Anau 2 weeks ago, a lady came up to me after the meeting. She was a bit quiet and a bit nervous, and she didn't want to ask the question in public, because I do want to have Q&A, because I want to find out what the heartbeat is of what you're concerned about. But she came up to me and she said, Bob, it's not just primary school. They're now starting to push this in early childhood education, preschool, kindies. Now, I thought, surely not. Surely that can't be right. Is there any ECE teachers here? No? Okay. 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 So, the Education Hub is a professional development group. On the left there, you'll see that their work is focused on providing early childhood and school teachers with basically professional development. And just a couple of months ago, they ran a Promoting Gender Inclusiveness in Early Childhood Settings with this guest professor from the States, Mara Sapon-Shevin. And she says this: children usually embrace ideas about transgender identities and the shift in pronouns readily when these are positively modelled. Most resistance comes from pesky parents, with young children usually demonstrating very little resistance. Remember, this is preschoolers, 2, 3, 4 years old. She says, there are many useful resources to support teachers to learn about the experiences and preference of those 2, 3, 4 year olds who identify as transgender and non-binary or who are gender non-conforming. Finding out about and using people's preferences for pronouns is important. They can be used to replace he, she, and can make using language much simpler. And it's all about dismantling oppression and stereotype. In fact, let me show you just a little video clip of her presenting, and she's talking about a young girl that turned up to preschool and her hair was a bit short, and the kids were just saying, your hair's a bit short. Okay, watch how she responds, but also watch, because you'll see the New Zealand host come in on the video. Listen carefully to what the New Zealand host says, because it's really interesting.
And the little girl said, I like my hair. I like my hair. I don't care if you think it looks like a boy. And then another child, 7 years old, turned and said, well, maybe she's non-binary. So that was a seven-year-old. And I thought back to myself at seven. I, of course, would have had no idea about the word or the concept. And I thought, just the acceptance of this child of, like, not just that you can have whatever hair you want, but really the extension of sort of understanding that gender is constructed and can be deconstructed, et cetera. I just saw as just a really, just a hopeful sign. And I have to say that if you look at the resistance to really thinking about gender inclusivity and gender nonconformity and gender creativity and all the words that are used, most of the resistance comes from adults. Very little of it comes from the young ones themselves.
That's the point of introducing these ideas and these concepts in early childhood, isn't it? Because children will just accept this is, they're just learning about how the world is. And if we present these opportunities to learn about all the differences in the world in a very positive way, then that's what they know.
Okay, so see what they're saying? Let's introduce the ideology. Let's indoctrinate it early because kids will just accept it. Let's get in early. Okay, and so these books are recommended, a book about pronouns, What Are Your Words? And as you can see there on the story is about my Uncle Leo coming to visit today. I can't wait to show them, this is just Uncle, show them around my neighbourhood, and I can't wait for all my neighbours to meet them. And then it talks about different pronouns here. She, her, AM, remember this is for preschool, and on the right-hand side, sometimes I just use one set of pronouns, sometimes I change my pronouns, and sometimes I use all of the pronouns I can think of. What could possibly go wrong? And then they recommend some songs to sing for preschoolers. You know how your kids, preschool kids love singing songs? Well, here's one that they can learn at preschool.
Wizard, I'm a gender fluid witch. I don't know what to call myself except for maybe Wix. It seems as if we're harder to see than a polar bear in a blizzard. We need representation because my best friend's a trans wizard.
Yeah, so that's from the Trans and Non-Binary Kids Mix. There's another song they can learn. You might know this one.
Letters as we walk the day. Lesbian, gay, and bi, and trans. Queer and intersex, asexual fans. We can be whatever that we are today, and no one can tell us that we've gone.
Yeah, great song, eh? Always more we can add to the list. I didn't know lipstick was a gender, so I need to add that to the 112. So that's 113 genders now for kids to choose from. Now, look, so I think the reason I'm showing you that is that we thought this was just high school concern. We now know that it's in primary school being pushed there, and we now can see it starting to come into professional development at preschool level. Going really young. Now, look, I think as a caring community who wants the best for kids, there's two, I would say, two really important things to understand in this whole transgender issue. The first is that the research shows that the majority of kids who struggle with gender identity grow out of it once they go through puberty. And why is that? Because puberty reinforces biology, doesn't it? We've all been through it. And so that's why a lot of professionals are saying watchful waiting. In other words, allow the child to go through puberty and that will deal with it for the majority of them, overwhelming majority. And what Paul McHugh, he set up the first transgender clinic at St. John's Hospital in the 70s, and they closed it down because they realised it wasn't helping. And he said, gender dysphoria is not a problem of the body, but the mind. Cutting at the body doesn't heal the mind. We psychiatrists would do better to concentrate on fixing their minds and not their genitalia. Because in New Zealand, basically, as soon as a child says that they identify as the opposite sex, the support, the counselling, the mechanism, the health fraternity kick in and affirm that and push them more towards it. With social transitioning, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and then operation. What happens if they don't do it? Well, possibly they are breaking the conversion therapy law by pushing back that they are biologically male or female. And unfortunately, schools feel under huge pressure to go along with this affirmation model. The good thing is that people are starting to speak up, professionals. This is Dr. Sarah Donovan from University of Otago, who says that we haven't had the proper discussion around this issue. And this was an article in The Listener last year from Charlotte Paul, who's also from University of Otago. And what's interesting is the paragraph that I have circled, which you probably can't see unless you're Steve Austin. But basically what she says is, I am writing this article because my younger colleagues are too scared to, because their career and their profession is threatened. Now, if you follow us on Family First, you would have got an email today where I went to Brisbane and interviewed a senior child psychiatrist in Queensland who has been suspended because she has dared to push back on the gender affirmation model because she says it's letting down kids. And so, you know, you have the Ministry of Health on the left saying that puberty blockers are fully reversible and safe. And then in the middle of the night, when they think nobody's looking, but we were, they suddenly take out that sentence and change it. So there is pushback, and European countries are now starting to change. They're realising that pushing children towards changing their sex and puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and then sending them off for operations once they're over 18 is not the answer. Socially transitioning is not the answer. Now, one of the tropes that will be used, and if you're a parent of a child going through this or you know a family, you can guarantee that the parents will be told that either you go along with what your child wants because it's better to have a live daughter than a dead son. Okay? That's how the professionals are manipulating the parents. The problem with that argument is that it's false. From Sweden, the Swedish study showed that it was false, but this is the latest study out of Denmark, and it showed that the suicide ideation and the mental health issues were just as strong post-transition as before transition. And why is that? Because they haven't dealt with the mind issues. Now, So that's the first thing to realise, is that most young children, like at primary school or intermediate, or even high school, start of high school, will grow out of it if they're not pushed down that track. But here's the second thing that I think we need to understand. Let's take this example of a girl who's got anorexia nervosa. Okay, so she thinks she's fat, but she's actually very skinny. Dangerously skinny. So she thinks she's fat, but the biological reality is that she's very skinny. And because she keeps on thinking she's fat, she starves herself, she vomits up food, and she gets stick thin to the point of where she may end up in hospital, and it can affect her life, right? So there's a major issue going on there. Now, because we love them and we care for them and we want a pastoral response, what do we do? Do we go up to her and say, yeah, you know what, you're as fat as, I will call you your preferred pronouns, a fat Amy, I will give you some weight loss pills and I'm going to book you in for a liposuction. Do we do that? Not if we love the child, not if we want to protect the child. What do? We heal the mind, because it's the mind that's at fault, not the body. But when a child turns up to a primary school or an intermediate or a high school and says that they think they are the opposite sex, immediately the culture is pushing these kids and saying, okay, what's your preferred name? What's your preferred pronouns? Let's start you on puberty blockers. Let's start you on cross-sex hormones and let's book you in for the mastectomy. Can you see how it's a totally different way that we treat it? And that's why we are harming. And unfortunately, the politicians, in their dumbness, passed a law which criminalises you as parents if you affirm your daughter is a girl and your son is a boy. That could be deemed to be conversion therapy, because you're stopping them, you're not affirming their transitioning. And it's an issue for pastors, for counsellors, and even for medical professionals. Now, I want to give you some resources, but let me just one thing is that you're probably thinking that you've got the problem, that you're out of touch with reality, okay? And you've got to be a bit more progressive, okay? They always say that if you go to the doctor and the doctor says it's progressive, that's actually not a good thing. So it's actually quite good to be conservative, and conservative means holding on to what is good. And the fact of the matter is the research shows that you actually represent the overwhelming majority of what people think. It's just that you probably don't think you do because you're getting hammered by Ministry of Education, what they're pushing, and hammered by what the media is pushing and social media. So I want to show you, just prove to you, that you are on the side of sanity. So we've done a lot of polling over the years using an independent research company, Courier Market Research. This was just one that's slightly off topic, but we did ask, should sex education lessons in primary schools be opt-in or opt-out? We actually found greater support for opt-in. You know, a little bit like Bible in schools is now opt-in, maybe we should make sex education opt-in. Okay, and if parents want their children to be polluted with this stuff, so be it. But here's some interesting questions. So we said, do you believe that primary age children should be taught that they can choose their gender and that it can be changed through hormone treatment and surgery? You'll see there that 3 out of 4 said no. They opposed this agenda. Only 1 in 10 absolutely support it. But what's interesting is that you'll see there in brackets that we started asking this question in 2018. And you'll see that it's much closer, 54 to 38. So there's actually a turning against this ideology by the general public. We also said that, you know, we should ban puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones and sex change surgeries for children under 18. Once again, majority support, 54%, only 27%, so about 1 in 4 opposed a total ban on that. We asked about should dudes be allowed to play in the girls' teams. 2/3 opposed. Once again, just that hardcore 10 to 15% support it. But once again, look at, we asked this question in 2018, look at the results, 39% each. So back in then, we thought, oh yeah, it can't be too hard. What's the problem with one dude playing in the sports team? Or what's the problem with a dude getting in the boxing ring with a girl, or a dude competing against a woman in weightlifting, or a dude getting into the swimming pool competing against women? We now know the problem, don't we? And so people are turning and see it as a major issue. Should a teacher lose their teaching license for misgendering a student? Once again, 2 out of 3 said, no, of course not. That hardcore 10 to 15% said yes. So what it says is that the overwhelming majority is against this ideology. So you're actually on the side of common sense. And I think it's important to remember that, because you might think that you're the odd one. You're not. And in fact, there is a tipping point where I think more and more people are opposing it because they're seeing the outcome. If 5 years ago, we thought, oh, well, we just need to be nice to these kids. They're troubled kids and we need to support them. We're now seeing the international research. We're seeing that this social transitioning and these puberty blockers are having harm. And like I say, if I had called this meeting 3 years ago, I don't think you would have come, because we really didn't know just how or what was going on. And it was really only launched in 2020 when we were all thinking about protecting the vulnerable by staying home for COVID. One other question we did ask back in 2016, we asked parents, would they be confident teaching their own children about sex and sexuality issues? And the overwhelming majority said yes. So, resources. Firstly, if you're an academic who likes lots of footnotes and bullet points, and you're quite bright, then download our analysis, which is on sexualityeducation.nz. So just remember, sexualityeducation.nz. If you're a boffin like me and prefer it simpler, then that pamphlet that was available, some of you have got, summarises what we've talked about tonight, and if you want to share it with other parents that you know that may be struggling or teachers, then you just go to sexeducation.nz and you can download that pamphlet. This is the key one though, and there were some of you did grab the hard copies and that's good, but you can download this. And this resource is the key one because it tells you what are your legal rights as parents, what are the legal rights and responsibilities of schools, how you can get into Board of Trustee meetings. It gives a model example of a form to get your child excluded from these programs. And it also gives a list of questions that you should ask your school if your child is moving to a new school or starting a new school, or you want to find out from your current school where they're at. One thing I really want to emphasise is that the worst thing you could do after tonight is go roaring down to the principal's office tomorrow morning, tell them all about what Bob McCoskrie and Family First told them. As soon as you mention my name, that's immediate, you've totally stuffed it. And go raging and say, you know, you don't want all of this. That's not going to win anybody or influence anybody. So what this parent guide really encourages you to do is firstly to find like-minded parents and then to engage with the teachers, because most teachers don't want anything to do with this. And engage with the senior teachers, the principal. The principal possibly doesn't want anything to do with it either. In fact, for a lot of them, they are just getting bombarded by so much stuff from Ministry of Education. It's kind of like on the pile over there. And they haven't got time to deal with the stuff that parents are actually wanting. And, you know, they're getting this pressure on relationships and sexuality education. Remember, the Board of Trustees is a group of parents just like you. So find out whether they're on side. So you can see what I'm saying. Don't go in all guns blazing, because that won't achieve anything. Go in with the view of influencing the key people in the school. Sometimes the key people in the school are the nurse or the guidance counsellor. Sometimes it's the principal. In some schools, it's the woman at the reception desk who's the most powerful in the school. There can be different gatekeepers, and you need to just find out. If your children are at a primary school, have you met the teacher? Have you let them know what your values are? My daughter said that parents would come in and she would quickly learn just about what their values were. Some of them were Muslim, some Christian, some non-Christian. But she realised that she was part of, you know, she was working with the parents, not against the parents. And it's really important for us to understand that. And so that's what the parent guide is designed to show you. Let me, just before we go to questions, let me give you a good news example of how this can be done. So there's a school up north that we did this presentation and the parents got together. There was a consultation being done by the school, which has to be done every 2 years. And so they did a survey asking the parents what they wanted. And this was the outcome. The newsletter went out and it said we had 208 members of our rural school, so that's a lot, who responded to our survey. And the consensus was relationships and sexuality education guidelines are not age appropriate for our school. The content should be taught by parents at home, and we should continue to communicate our programs prior to teaching. So what we've found is that often the pressure is coming from the Ministry of Education, but if you get them behind the principal, it gives them the backbone and the support to say, our community doesn't want this. And at the moment, the curriculum is not compulsory, it's to be moulded according to what the community wants, and that's a good thing. Now, just to get the question out of the way of, which is going to probably be asked, is will the change of government make any difference? Possibly. The likely Minister of Education is going to be Erica Stanford. She has definitely expressed, as has Chris Hipkins and Nicola Willis, expressed concern about the gender ideology. But the only concern is that Erica Stanford has said that she doesn't want it to be optional for schools. She wants a compulsory curriculum. That's a problem. Okay, so that's a red flag, and we need to monitor that. Okay, but it shows it can work. Now, just quickly before I go to questions, let me just show you this one. two videos that I would encourage you to watch if you're in this situation. This interview was with Erin Friday. It's on our website and on our YouTube channel, Family First. Erin Friday, I don't know if you've heard of her, she's an American mum. She's a left-wing, liberal, Biden-voting. She's so liberal that she moved to California. That's how liberal she is. And then her 12-year-old went to school and got this curriculum taught. Came home, started saying she wanted preferred pronouns, and then came home a bit later hanging around with friends and said that she wanted to change her sex. And Erin basically worked to rescue her from the ideology and succeeded and has set up a whole basically outreach, which is actually in a number of countries now. So if you are a parent or you know a parent who is dealing with the situation and doesn't and is being told, you know, if you don't go along with what your child wants, they're going to commit suicide, you know. You think about that kind of trope. You know, if you don't have KFC tonight for dinner, your child's going to commit suicide. That, you know, that's the type of manipulation that they are using. And it's terrible. And there's no truth to it. So that's one video. The other video is this interview that I did with a girl called Chloe Cole. So she's from the States, C-O-L-E, Chloe Cole. She's 19 there. I'm hoping to get her to New Zealand next year. But at 13, she started to transition. And at 15, she had a mastectomy. So she's now unable to have children, unable to breastfeed, and is basically a long-term client of Big Pharma because she's on so many medications to deal with what's happened to her body. And she detransitioned at 16. And she just, I mean, she's more mature and understands this issue more than the 120 MPs combined. She's because of experience. And she says, you know, I was 15 at the time. Why was I allowed to make a life-changing decision like this? So if you know a family that's struggling with this and they've got a young girl or boy who thinks that they're the opposite sex, then get them to watch her testimony and there is information there. Right, we are up to question time, so you're going to take this mic. This mic's going to come around. And